Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hi there, and welcome to the Explaining History podcast. Today I want to talk about the relationship between Mao, Khrushchev, and the decision to launch the Great Leap Forward and the resultant famine that kills, conservative estimates are 40 million Chinese people, but it could be considerably higher than that. The dynamics of Mao's economic policy are very much decided by foreign policy considerations, and the most significant consideration is the relationship between Maoist China and the Soviet Union. Now, in order to understand this relationship and its deterioration, we need to kind of rewind to the death of Stalin in 1953. Mao, in 1949, had made a rather obsequious visit to see Stalin for his birthday, returning weeks later with good tidings for the Chinese people about the cooperation that would ensue. Mao was actually snubbed by Stalin, really, who he admired so much. He was kept waiting for a long time and treated as far inferior to any of the other new communist leaders from Eastern Europe. So he was really quite smarting at that one. And he had been determined to gain a trade deal for China. The deal, the future for China economically was pretty bleak. The Mao had chosen to orient China away from Europe, America, and other world capitalism in general. And the sole trading partner that China would now have would be the USSR until relations developed with Eastern European countries later on. So when Stalin died, it was Mao's expectation that he would step up as the most significant figure in world communism, but that doesn't happen. Instead, Khrushchev becomes the successor to Stalin and the pivotal figure in world communism. And even worse than that, in Mao's eyes, is the denunciation of Stalin in Khrushchev's secret speech in 1956. Now, for further details on the secret speech, there's a podcast I've done last year, or perhaps even the year before, my memory escapes me, in this list anyway, so you can dig that out and it'll give you some background. But the denunciation of Stalin, Mao interpreted as a denunciation of him. Mao was an adherent of Stalinism, from collectivization of agriculture to instituting five-year plans. And he looked to emulate Stalin as faithfully as possible. And a denunciation of Stalinism, Mao predicted, presciently, would unleash all sorts of tensions and undermine the communist world. The resultant Budapest uprising vindicates what Mao believes. Now, there's a lot of writing by Mao, a lot of very kind of gushing praise of Stalin that focuses on economic progress, saying that Stalin had transformed the country from peasant agriculture and serfdom through to being an industrial superpower, using, you know, the correct politics and ideas and methods and fighting the correct struggles and all that sort of thing. And Mao looked to Stalin as a kind of an economic role model. And it was this that partly motivated the second five-year plan, or the Great Leap Forward, in that Mao, feeling that the legacy of Stalinism was under threat, and also looking at the Soviet Union with great suspicion, and attempts at rapprochement with America and the West with great suspicion, Mao thought, you know, essentially these guys are going soft. They are backsliding, and they'll backslide into capitalism eventually. Whereas China, under me, is the only power that's actually fought America in the Korean War vigorously, and in Mao's eyes, won. The popular Chinese propaganda was that China had won the Korean War. Certainly they had at least fought America to a standstill. The answer to this backsliding, the answer to this revisionism, was to eclipse the Soviet Union using Stalinist methods, to prove back to the Soviet Union that Stalinism worked. And in doing so, established China as the world economic power in the communist world. The Soviet Union had always committed itself to expanding its economic growth beyond that of the United States, which is wildly unrealistic. And Mao was determined to match this by eclipsing Britain's economic growth. Britain was in the 1950s, a far more sluggish economy than the United States, but significantly in terms of living standards and overall wealth, significantly wealthier than China was. But the result of the Great Leap Forward was actually to shrink the Chinese economy. This is the level of catastrophe. In 1957, Mao visited Moscow again for the 40th anniversary of the October Revolution, when all the leaders of world communism gathered, and it was an opportunity by Mao to try to snub Khrushchev and try to suggest that Mao was really the alpha dog in the relationship. He patronised Khrushchev, saying to him, and I quote from Frank Dakota's Mao's Great Famine, "No matter who, everyone needs support. There is a Chinese saying that while there is beauty in a lotus, it needs the support of its green leaves. You, Comrade Khrushchev, even though you're a lotus, you too need to be supported by the leaves." He goes on to address the Russians, saying that there are two winds in the world, an east wind and a west wind. We have a saying in China that if the east wind does not prevail over the west wind, then the west wind prevails over the east wind. I think that the key point of the international situation right now is that the east wind prevails over the west wind. That is to say, the forces of socialism have become overwhelmingly superior to the forces of capitalism. And Mao then goes on to basically do some very rough mental arithmetic about the numbers of people in the world and the likelihoods that if the Soviet Union and China were to have a nuclear exchange with the USA and the West, that there would be just about enough people in the communist world to restart civilization, and it wouldn't be that big a catastrophe. This is at a point of high nuclear tension between America and the USSR, which will reach its peak in the period 61 to 62, and then gradually decline. But the scope for kind of a nuclear exchange between 1956 and 62 is really quite significant,
and something that the Soviets were not taking lightly. Now, even if Mao was speaking in exaggerations or bluffing, it was still alarming stuff. And yet it was a way of showing that he was the true revolutionary. And the truth about the Soviet Union in the 50s and 60s is that you can't really call it a revolutionary society. There had been, in essence, two phases of revolution. The Bolshevik Civil War period from 1917 to the death of Lenin in 1924, and a sort of period of about 4 years of stagnation. And then Stalinism. And after Stalin, the difficulty of trying to hold together a Stalinist society without Stalin himself, of trying to bring about social and cultural revolution in Russia without immense violence was an irreconcilable problem. And the difficulty that Khrushchev has is which way to go, to continue with the development of an established bureaucratized a system of state repression, to allow reform, to allow change, to hope that that will stimulate economic reform and the kind of levels of consumer prosperity that were being seen in the West, or to allow the regime to kind of, as it does under Brezhnev, to simply stagnate. Brezhnev realises really that Khrushchev's reforms cause nothing but instability. The problem of how to do Stalinism without Stalin is never fully reconciled, and Mao can see this and is able to present the People's Republic of China as being a much more dynamic socialist society, one that is willing to take big risks, one that is willing to carry out the first Chinese five-year plans, one that is willing to struggle to have social revolution and upheaval and class warfare, and one ultimately that results in the Cultural Revolution from 1966 onwards. So when Mao returned to China, he returned in the knowledge that Khrushchev planned to outstrip America economically, in terms of agricultural industrial production, and do this through de-Stalinizing, believing that once the peasants were freed from Stalinist control, that their productivity would dramatically increase, and this would be the tonic really to allow them to outstrip America. Mao was determined to show that Stalinism could still work, and that his own brand of, I suppose you call them, sort of Maoist Stalinism would be superior. And part of the catastrophe of the Great Leap Forward really is driven by Mao's own blindness.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape.
And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Logical and personal blindness to this to the possibility that he might be wrong. So, just as with the Stalinist five-year plans, the Great Leap Forward, which was China's second five-year plan, the first having been generally seen as being quite successful, while the second five-year plan was driven by targets and projections. And these projections were, for the most part, wildly over-optimistic. They were over-optimistic for the given ideological and diplomatic reasons that we've already discussed. The projections had to be seen to be outstripping the USSR, outstripping Great Britain and the West. But really, the target of Mao's projections was the USSR. And the existence of the Sputnik satellite that had been launched into orbit that year in 1957 and that had been an immense humiliation to the Western world, who considered themselves far more scientifically advanced. This was also a challenge to Mao, the idea that the relatively backward Soviet economy could have produced such a scientific marvel. This was something that Mao was determined to eclipse with his own achievements. Some party members and economists rightly told Mao that a massive surge in economic output without an equivalent expansion in infrastructure was unlikely to work. For example, during the Great Leap Forward, the railway system effectively breaks down. This is for two reasons. Firstly, trains are being laden with more goods. They are being used more often. The rail network can only take so much traffic, and if you double or triple the amount of use of rails, they tend to wear out a lot quicker. The signal systems break down, and there is a paralysis, and there are obviously a huge number of accidents. The other reason was that as the railway network was expanded during the Great Leap Forward, it was expanded with poor quality steel, something we'll explain in a moment. And railways were brittle and cracked, and there were derailings and all that kind of thing. And this shows that what Mao was being told was correct, that a huge surge in production, even if that's possible, isn't always desirable, because you can often wind up with surplus raw materials or surplus finished goods that are of no use. They're just sort of sitting in warehouses somewhere, decaying, rusting, what have you. And also, the existing infrastructure you have can be put under too much pressure and start to break down. But the real crisis for China develops from the use and abuse of human resources, of people. The development of communes, of huge communal farming and agricultural labour groups, from peasants who had been whose land had been collectivised and then communalised, was a very dangerous development for China, for central China particularly, because the communes meant that large numbers of Chinese peasants were removed from the land. They were taken to do things like irrigation work and dam building, where many of them were worked to death. The need to hit quotas, to hit targets, meant that peasants would be worked around the clock for something, days on end without sleep, and the result is that they just drop dead. And the peasants who, when hundreds of thousands of peasants are taken away from the land, obviously crops aren't planted, harvests aren't taken in, and the quota that exists for the peasant communes in terms of food production still stands. So that means that when peasants are taken away from the land to work on other projects, the communes are still expected to produce a quota of food for the state, which is then requisitioned. The government came up with all sorts of essentially harebrained schemes about planting rice closer together or planting it less deep in order to make it grow quicker. And the Chinese peasants who had farmed rice for thousands of years knew that this isn't how you do it. And again, the under orders to plant rice in particular ways, the rice harvests fail. Mao is living in his own feedback loop in terms of production and agricultural output targets. The desire to please Mao, the desire to be seen to be hitting targets, causes local party members to create all sorts of misleading, fabricated and wildly exaggerated reports. So when some party members start to learn that parts of China are going hungry and that famine is developing, Mao himself is largely blind to this and chooses not to see it. Though during the year of the Great Leap Forward, Mao actually travels extensively across China. He uses his position to visit sites across China, factories and farms. And so there was a great deal of willful ignorance there as well. It would not have been difficult for Mao to find out about the famine, but he perhaps didn't wish to. Some party cadres in the communes found the best plot of land and intensively farmed it using agricultural fertilizer and pesticides and everything possible to send the yield sky high from that small plot of land, and then it would extrapolate this to the rest of the commune, thus coming out with an entirely fictitious estimate for how much food could be produced. And the need for fertilizer meant that not only was human and animal waste spread on the fields. This is obviously China, like anywhere else, has a deep cultural aversion to handling human waste. But anything that could be viewed as fertilizer, including even the mud walls of huts and houses that would have had all sorts of animal matter in them, dung and animal hair and that kind of thing, were used. So hundreds of thousands of peasant houses were knocked down in order to fertilise the fields. And the rationale here was that if the fields are fertilised and there are bumper crop yields, not only will the party and Mao himself be pleased, but also it will mean that there will be surplus food to feed the workers and surplus food to export abroad. That will mean that machinery and other useful stuff from overseas can be imported. One of the main causes of the famine, how we transition from hunger to famine, are ongoing food exports. Mao continued to export food and to firstly to get a capital for development, but also to send to Eastern European countries such as Bulgaria and Albania. Why here? Well, because the further you go into the Balkans, the more the less Soviet-centred the communist regimes were, the more they'd been influenced by Tito in Yugoslavia, for example, and the easier they were to woo away from Moscow. And so Mao tried to bribe Albania and Bulgaria with cheap food whilst his own country was starving in a bid to undermine Moscow. as the first reports of bumper harvests rolled in, Mao was hooked, really. He believed absolutely that the reports were correct and assumed that the trajectory was only going to be upward from here, and that poverty had been eliminated in China, that living standards were about to shoot through the roof, and that the ability to of the peasants to eat as much as they liked would be the bedrock of his regime from then on in. It justified everything that he had believed and justified everything that he thought about the misdirection, the misguidedness of the Soviet Union. And this is always a dangerous point for anybody when they're given confirmation of their own persuasions and prejudices. And this it also made Mao, for much of the 5 year of the Great Leap Forward, unassailable. And this again is a contributory factor to the famine. When the Great Leap Forward wound down in 1962, Mao had been deeply compromised by the catastrophe and was sidelined in favour of Deng Xiaoping and Liu Shaoqi, who become the de facto rulers of China for the next 4 years until Mao stages his return during the Cultural Revolution. And the two of them tried to liberalise farming in much the way that Khrushchev had, implying that perhaps Khrushchev had the last laugh in the end. And this is something that Mao never forgets or forgives, and is the two of them are purged during the Cultural Revolution. Deng is sent for re-education, spends his time working in a bicycle shop, and Liu Shaoqi is violently murdered and tortured to death. So there you have it. The Great Leap Forward and the famine that it creates are in part the product of ideological certainty, in part of rigidity on Mao's part, and partly it's due to the need of Mao to be able to demonstrate the success of China against the Soviet Union and in China's struggle to replace the Soviet Union as the preeminent power in the communist world. Anyway, I hope you've enjoyed that, and I'll catch you on the next podcast, and I'll put something up later in the week. All the best. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.